Once more into the breach, dear friend.
Well, let's close the wall up with our English dead.
And here we are, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, with another exciting episode of The Personal Wealth Coach, starring Jeff and...
Jake.
McClure.
Exciting. Yeah. Exciting for us, maybe.
Well, maybe. I don't know.
In extreme circumstance, if we're excited, something's gone wrong.
Well, first we have to take our clothes off.
Oh, we're going to disclose. Yeah. That's exciting.
And the personal wealth coach is not only an exciting, exciting to us.
Let's be truthful here. Full of truth is less exciting probably than what we're making it sound like.
The personal wealth coach has been noted by some to be a slightly exciting program, and others have been reported as, I don't know, we've never had anybody say it was boring. I've never heard anybody say it was boring.
Well, that's because they're sleeping and drooling all over.
It is suspected by generally accepted authorities that occasionally people drool when they listen to this show.
Yeah, we should warn you in advance, please have your coffee. And if you are excited by this, it probably means that your medication is due.
Mm. Could be.
Okay, that was a beginning of a disclosure.
Well, that was more of a disclaimer.
That was more of a medical disclaimer. Now we've got side effects of this program may include babbling truth in groups where they're not recognizing truth, causing your friends and enemies to change their opinions of you. Maybe that your friends become enemies and your enemies become friends, or it could be you just have a bunch of enemies. Anything else we should disclaim?
Well, we probably ought to tell them that the Personal Wealth Coach is also a business that is in the business of investment advice and wealth management that's located in Salado. And it's in the name of the Personal Wealth Coach business and the name of this radio presentation is the same. And that's not purely coincidental, although it is coincidental. And that the two principal advisors and managers at the business and the two guys who are talking on this radio presentation today are presuming, of course, that today is February 16th, 2017, where you are, are the same people. So there's a high level of correlation here, and the correlation is actually causative or something like that.
The causation and correlation are the same?
In this particular case, I think it's true. But the telephone number, if you'd like to call in here and interrupt our reverie, is 254-773-1400. And again, today is February 18th, 2017. And if it is the same date where you are, then we're live and in living voice. And you're certainly welcome to call in and ask or comment about anything economic or investment-oriented. Oriented? That's not true.
Orientated?
Related. Okay?
All right.
All right. Now what do we do?
Now we discuss what has happened in the week. This week, we have had days.
Consistently.
Almost totally consistent. But what you will notice is a day without sun is night. So this week, we have had days and nights. Now on to breaking news. The morning has broken.
Sorry, like the first morning?
All right. So what's happened this week in the market and in the economy? And we've got some good things to talk about. We've got the leading economic indicators. We've got stock market moves. We've got proposals by the Trump administration to raise taxes on many areas, which, by the way, is just kind of a blip on the radar as far as the media is concerned. It's released through a normal bureaucracy, and we looked at it and said, well, I'm glad this isn't going to be accepted.
Well, the point is that it's kind of an interesting thing. We put it in the newsletter. The presidents, the White House, the Treasury, the administration actually released a, 270-some page document outlining their rationale and what they're going to do in taxes in 2017, or what they want the Congress to do in taxes, their proposal. It's the rationale behind their tax proposal. And it involves
283 pages.
283 pages. And it involves a really astonishing large number of tax increases.
Yeah. Let me give you the information so that you're welcome to look it up. If you would like to relieve your insomnia at some point, you can read this document, and it will cause sleep to come blissfully to you. From the treasury.gov, you look, or you can just Google, General Explanations of the Administration's Fiscal Year 2017 Revenue Proposals. And it includes all kinds of goodies. The first thing you should know is that nobody expects any of this to become reality, including the administration generally. This document comes out every year. Every administration releases it. They're calling for it's their budgetary proposals and their revenue proposals. So it's the explanations of what their revenue and budget are. So this is the revenue side of that. There's another one that will be coming out that's the budget side of it. And the thing to know about this is I'm going to have to look up and see the last time that Congress actually accepted and used these things. I don't think they ever have. I don't think there's ever been a president that proposed a budget and Congress just said, oh, yeah, we'll do that. Or proposed revenue builders and Congress just said, oh, yeah, we'll do that. So know that in the beginning, but also know that it doesn't make a lot of sense to propose a bunch of stuff that you don't want. So you've got things that you wanted to discuss on this document.
Well, there's a couple of things on here that are pretty profound, and it may provide some guidance of what the administration really wants. And again, the thing that amazes me is I don't see it all over the papers. And that is, among other things, they propose a $19 per barrel tax on all oil, domestic and imported. $19 when you're running around $50 per barrel, which is where it is right now, is effectively a 20% tax on all oil. Now, any imported oil, and a lot of our gasoline comes from imported oil. What?
If it's at $50 a barrel now and you're adding a $19 a barrel tax on it, I think that's a 40%.
No, 20 into 50 is one-fifth, and that's... No, you're right. It's a 40%.
The
duh.
Maxes are
yeah,
weird there.
Duh, yeah.
So you're talking about a 38% increase.
Yeah, and then the additional taxes on gasoline. So what that would do is it kicked the cost of gasoline up between $4 and $5 a gallon.
Again.
But it would be taxes that would be the difference. The now, if – there's nothing in there, by the way, about the the BAT, the Border Adjustment Tax, we'll talk about that later, that the House of Representatives has been discussing. And there's nothing – this is the amazing thing in here. The other tax increases, there's a couple of pretty interesting ones. One, they want to increase capital gains tax from the current nominal for Joe everybody, 20%. Now, if you have a tremendous amount of income, it can go up to as high as 24%. But they want to increase it to 28%. And they say nothing about rolling back the other 4%. So I guess it for upper income people to be 32%. But a 28% tax on capital gains. And then they also want to...
That's a rise. That's a big rise.
It's currently 20. It'd go to 28%. That would... Now, last time we did that, which was in 1987, we got a stock market crash when investors woke up to the fact that a pretty massive tax had been put on gains in the stock market. We had a real estate crash and a stock market crash as a result of that. The other thing that was in the document or is in the document that was pretty astonishing in light of the campaign promises, and I will say that President Trump has been pretty good about keeping his campaign promises, but he in his campaign, if I recall correctly, said he wanted to do away with the estate tax or the death tax. And what the proposal out of the Treasury Department, out of the White House, said is we want to lower the exclusion from $5 million per estate to $3.5 million and then raise the taxes from 35 to 45% on amounts above that. Whoa, that is... that's big because there are a lot of people in the United States today who, between their 401k and their houses and their whatever else they have, there's a pretty good sized chunk of people and life insurance who'll go over the $3.5 million mark. And the point, and this is an interesting thing about the estate tax, it specifically says this is not to be adjusted for future inflation.
So that's a problem. This is one, here's one you're talking about. He claimed he didn't want to do, he wanted to do away with the death tax. This is one that he addressed specifically on many, many occasions during the campaign, the Buffett rule. So the Buffett rule, by the way, is just, it's called the fair share tax. That'll tell you who really has made this up. This is a very Democrat idea where dividends right now are taxed at a lower rate than normal income. Well, the concept here is that everybody should be taxed at the higher rate. If you're in the higher income, you should be taxed at a higher rate on everything. Well, that's the fair share tax, the Buffett rule. And that's on page 157 of the Trump administration's new revenue proposals. I'm very confused by this. It looks like they wrote something and they put a bunch of stuff in there, but it doesn't look like they looked at any of the things that were the fundamental reason for being elected. I'm confused about that. Very confused.
When I first found the document, I thought...
Found. It was released. Right.
Well, when I found the document at the Treasury website, and by the way, there's I didn't see any news articles about it. I just happened to stumble across it when I was looking for something else. I thought it was a leftover from the Obama administration because of the way the taxes, the you know, increasing taxes and increasing the death tax and decreasing the amount of, I mean, increasing capital gains taxes. Those sound so Democrat, so penalize business, penalize investors, because we're all the investors are bad people and they need to get beat up anyway. That I thought for sure it had to be something from the Obama administration. And then I saw some notations in there, for example, the increased gasoline tax and the increase on in the tax on oil, the $19 per barrel tax on oil.
This is going to make your face a little bit red, I think. It's going to make my face a little bit red, too. This wasn't an Obama administration document.
But it was to pay for the trillion, for the upgrade in the infrastructure that the president had promised. And I mean, okay, that's fine. If you want to hit us with a 40% tax on petroleum to pay for the infrastructure, fine. Announce it. Come out in your news conference and say, "Well, this is our great tax plan that we've been promising."
Did you hear what I said?
What's that?
Just now, what I said.
Did you going to make
your? No, this was an Obama administration proposal.
Really?
Yes.
Well, then why is it published in February of 2016 or 2017?
It's fiscal year 2017. It was published in February of 2016. It was published a year ago.
I feel like an idiot.
Well, I mean, it's a.
Does it say 2016 or 2017 on the document?
It says 2017 on the document.
It says February 2017, right on the front of the document.
On the front of the document, you know, where the it doesn't say February. It says fiscal year 2017. And it was proposed by the president in February of 2016. So this explains why the Buffett rule was in there and the estate tax and everything else. We're not going to be able to see – well, the thing is that the Trump administration is running a little bit behind in a lot of areas. But this is supposed to come out from the Treasury Department for the Trump administration for fiscal year 2018 – in the very near future, but the secretary has just been confirmed Secretary of Treasury. So I don't know if we may not see that for a couple of months.
Well, we've just proved ourselves to be idiots.
I think that was a pre-proven fact. If you guys, I mean, we did give a lot of disclaimers at the beginning of the program.
It's on the Treasury website.
It is. Well, so are the fiscal year proposals going all the way back to 1990.
Right.
So every year, those proposals get stuck on the Treasury website. That's the thing that they send off to Congress, and Congress gets the right to look back at them. But Going back to 1990, none of these have been accepted. So all of the ones that they have listed here, I'm going to have to dig back through and see how much further back we can dig. I should have grabbed it when it said the Buffett rule, because that Trump does not like Buffett.
Well, you know, you got to give us credit for the fact that this is, man, this sure looks like something the Obama administration would publish.
It is something the Obama administration. We got a caller on.
Okay.
773-1400. Caller, go ahead.
Yeah, guys, enjoy the show. With all the fake news stories that are going on, it kind of intrigued me. I'm not going to try this by any means, but with all the program trading and instantaneous trades and buying and selling, could somebody plant a fake business story in the news, take advantage of either an immediate high or an immediate low, and then cash out before?
Sure, they do it all the time.
The company. Give me an example. I'll hang up.
But several people have done that, and they are now wearing orange jumpsuits.
Right. This is one of the key areas of enforcement that the SEC has. Day traders do this regularly. If you're reading bulletin boards and getting information, the SEC's got machines out there combing through bulletin boards about trading, and when people dump information, they correlate IP addresses with trades, but they don't catch it every time. So yes, this is one of those areas. It's important to recognize here. In 2015, the armed robbery of banks in the United States was at an all-time low. Are you familiar with this?
Mm-hmm.
So we had fewer armed bank robberies, and that includes somebody coming in with a note saying, I have a gun, even if they don't have a gun. So there were fewer armed bank robberies from banks since the history of the United States. So we're talking per capita here. I mean, just an all-time low. But bank robbery losses were at an all-time high, because most of the robberies don't take place in the bank anymore. They take place on the internet. And the same is true when we're talking about the stock market. There are fewer paper fraud cases and a lot more electronic fraud cases. If you are reading a story and it's not published by a reputable source, and that's kind of a hard thing to figure out, because a lot of times reputable sources will jump on these bandwagons and just report it because somebody else has reported it. Look at the source before you put money down, please. Absolutely. I mean, this is like if you read on the internet that you should invest $100,000 somewhere, you should probably investigate that. If you see a deal that, you know, the news has popped up about something and you see the price start going up on, that doesn't mean it's been vetted. It means other people have read the same news story. Check where the sources are.
There have been, actually, I don't remember the exact names and who did it, but there was a guy fairly recently in Great Britain, turns out it was a teenager, who had made a tremendous amount of money by posting fake news stories on bulletin boards. What he would do is he would short a stock, then post some bad news about the story in such a way that it looked very official, like it was an official release. And because of the fact that day traders often move at very, very high speed, they see something and they immediately fire the trade off, trying to get ahead of everybody else. He was shorting stocks, meaning he was selling them without owning them, and the stock would drop. And then he would purchase it back at the lower price. And, of course, as soon as the stock was trading at $10 a share, and it, and as a result of his fake news story, it dropped to $7. And he immediately would purchase it at $7. Everybody would look for the source of the news story, realize that it was fake. He would jump back to $10, and then he would sell the stocks that he purchased at $7 at $10. And he would do this, by the way, without expending any money, because he had shorted the stock. He sold it at a lower price than it was trading for the market, and would have to make that up on the other end if it didn't go down. But it did go down, and he did that about 10 or 15 times before he got caught. In the actually the SEC caught him, but it was the British authorities. And the reason he was able to do it as many times as he did is because we had to go, the SEC had to go to the English authorities to arrest the guy.
Right. The term for it is, it's an easy thing to remember. It's called market manipulation. And until 2010, it was legal for market manipulation to be used in commodities. So oil prices, silver prices, all that good stuff. If you were buying through an exchange, then you were not, you were allowed to manipulate that if you wanted. Until 2010, the Dodd-Frank rule came out. Now, Dodd-Frank has about 90% of it as being overregulation, and about 10% of it was something that, in my opinion, this is obviously my opinion, 10% of it was probably appropriate, and 90% of it was over the top. And this is one of those areas that it removed the ability to do market manipulation if you were using a traded contract. So if you're using futures contracts on gold, it's illegal to go out and spread fake news and then profit from it. If you're just buying and selling gold, not on the futures market, it's still totally legal to put out fake news, say whatever you want to get it sold, and sell it. So that's just something on the side to know about if you're in coin purchases or buying on eBay, something like that. It's fine to do. It is not okay when you get into the futures market. It is not okay when you get into the stock market or the bond market.
There have been very subtle attempts to do this. Well, sometimes not so subtle, by hedge funds. And
yeah, there was a big scandal of 2 years ago on
right. It. And from time to time, if you read the financial news as we do, you find that some hedge fund manager has been charged with market manipulation or insider trading or something similar. And in many cases, it's because they found a very subtle way of doing this. Now, there's an entire section at the SEC. And in the stock exchange has it, where they watch for sudden movements in a stock, immediately go back and look for the for news that might have caused that sudden movement. And if it turned out it was fake news, as Jake was saying, they immediately start tracing back to see where it came from.
And that's where they make a lot of arrests. There's a relatively recent one. One of the first arrests made for the futures contract manipulation, which the futures contract was kind of the leading edge of those instant trades. Futures contracts are one of the oldest forms of intellectual property. So let me kind of take a step back. Let's do some history building here. Way back when farmers were first working for themselves and not for some lord or landlord of some kind, they recognized that they needed some money to buy the seed a lot of times before they got started. So what they would do is they would write a contract that they would sell the crop once it was fully developed for a certain amount of money. So say it's wheat, I'll sell this in the fall when I've harvested it. I'll sell this to you for X amount of money. So it's obviously based on the trading value of that day. And then it's discounted because you have to wait to get the crop. So it's, you know, there's an expiration date where it says this got to be delivered on that date. It's real crops. That has come forward to today in every aspect of agriculture and mineral and everything else, because for the same reason, if you're going to open up a mine and you're going to dig out granite or limestone or gold or anything else, the expense comes before you get the profit. So if you sell a contract saying that you're going to sell a certain amount of gold to someone at a certain time based on money that you're getting today, you've got to come up with that gold. And for a very long time, that was regulated in a very different way than the stock market. Insider information wasn't a big deal. This is a great movie to, as a reference. Most of the younger listeners won't know what I'm talking about. A lot of the older listeners will chuckle. There's a Dan Aykroyd, Eddie Murphy movie called Trading Places, where the whole movie is about two sets of people manipulating the orange juice concentrate market. The Waldorfs are doing it, and then Eddie Murphy and Dan Aykroyd do it to get them back over the $1 bet. And it's this, it's a great movie, by the way. I think it's fantastic, but it's representing something that's totally illegal today that was legal at the time. Commodities manipulation was just fine if you didn't steal it from someone. So you could tell them that the report was going to say something that it didn't say. You could get insider information on what the crops were going to be like at a given time. That was just called research. It's changed now. If you have information that other people don't have and you got it from a way that's shady, then you can't use that information. Now, let me tell you some information you can use. Let's go from this perspective. Valid research could be, and this is something that many firms in the past have done, and there are probably mutual fund firms and hedge fund firms that are doing it now. The act of sitting in somebody's parking lot and watching people come out the door at the time that work ends. So you can measure if they all come running out the door at 5 o'clock on the dot. That tells you something about the emotion in that corporation. Everybody wants to get out of there. If they start trickling slowly out the door at 5 o'clock and the last person's leaving at 7:30, you see a lot of dedication in that staff. Well, that's not publicly available data. That's research that you can come up with by sitting in a parking lot. That's not market manipulation. It's not insider trading. It's research. Because anybody could do that if they wanted to. If instead you were sitting in the parking lot and you see the last person leave the building at 7:30 and you climb in a window and start reading papers, that's insider information and breaking and entering. So that's the theft of information that's not publicly available.
And if you find one of these people after they get off work in a bar and you sit down next to them and query them and try to find out what's going on inside the company, you can't use that either because that's insider information.
Right.
Anything that's available to the public, in other words, if you can see it as a member of the public without violating the law in the process, then it's perfectly legitimate to use that information. If you have to cause somebody to violate their own ethics agreement with the company, for instance, the employee probably has been told – and it's probably signed a document saying you will not go out into the bar and talk to people about what's going on in the company.
Right, a confidentiality agreement.
If you convinced, even if – and this is the weird thing on insider trading and a lot
even
of –
even if you didn't know it was insider information.
A lot of people have gotten in trouble over this and gotten fined. Nobody's gone to prison to the best of my knowledge if they didn't have any knowledge, but they did get fined. And that is that let's just say your buddy works – and this actually happened with Texas Instruments – when they were here, that you've got a buddy that your brother-in-law works for Texas Instruments and you're sitting around the dinner table with your brother-in-law and he says, you know, we're in a big trouble in there. They're laying people off. They're probably just going to shut down the entire printer division here and I may lose my job. And then you say, and you go out and look at the price of TI stock and you realize it hasn't plunged.
And you go, oh, I'm going to sell this.
Well, you
that's
know, you,
illegal.
So you go out and short TI stock. Or you hear, hey, from your brother-in-law, hey, we just got this great contract with the government. We're going to get about $1 billion and our profit margins are going to go up and it's going to be really, really wonderful. And you go out and buy TI stock.
Right. So Martha Stewart's an example of that. Yeah. Martha Stewart had information from a friend of hers who was the CEO of a corporation at a dinner party who said, this whole research thing that we just did is falling on its face. So she went and sold her holdings. She only owned the holdings because the CEO was her friend. But she sold the holdings with knowledge that wasn't available to the rest of the world. It's kind of like looking at somebody else's cards at the poker table. Now, go ahead.
Well, this is an interesting thing. She didn't actually get in very much trouble. All she would have had to have done had she
told the truth.
Had she told the truth about this was say, yeah, yeah, the broker called me up and said so-and-so is selling, and that's the CEO, so you probably ought to sell too. Well, the broker did get in trouble over this.
Right.
But she wouldn't have gotten in trouble had she not lied to the agents from the SEC and the FBI when they came and interviewed her about it.
Yeah, and this is the sad piece of this is that she was a former stockbroker. She knows the law here, and she still lied to the FBI about it. So that's some things. Martha Stewart is being held up as if this was an improper. No, she knew what she was doing, and it's like cheating at poker. You can all make money at poker, you can all lose money at poker, but you can't be cheating. That's a very clear symptom of wrongdoing.
It's rather like what happened with General Flynn. And it is really, and from my perspective, about 12 kinds of weird. He technically may have violated something called the Logan Act when he talked to the Russian ambassador. And
Only if he were countering diplomatic moves by the current administration, which he was not.
But in the 100 and some years since the Logan Act has been passed, nobody's ever been prosecuted on it, so probably nobody would do anything about it.
Right. It's up to the president whether or not to prosecute. But he lied to the vice president.
He also apparently lied to the FBI. They're not going to prosecute him on it. But he why did he go around lying about doing something that was, in fact, legal? That was a B. What I really don't get is why the guy who used to be the director of the Defense Intelligence Agency was talking to a Russian ambassador and not knowing that what he was saying was being monitored.
Now, let me come from back to the question from the caller. There are some buzzwords that are running around right now. The buzzwords are fake news. Mm-hmm. And can someone use fake news to manipulate the market? And this is like it's a new thing. In Texas, we have something called a lemon law for vehicles, for cars. But going back to horse trading days and before, market manipulation is not new. Fake news is not new. We may be really aware of it right now because there's new sources of it. Your Facebook feed is probably half fake, just because the people that are posting it are doing it because their heartstrings are being tugged or because their fear strings are being tugged. Whatever it is, they're posting without verifying. And if you read it, it's half and half likely to be fake. If you're trying to make your long-term investment decisions based on that kind of information or short tips that you get from the internet, what's really going on here, and you should be aware of it, it's people are going to get suckered by this forever. Into the future, it will always happen because it's always happened. It's part of human nature. I mean, the horse trader will tell you how beautiful your daughter is to sell you a horse. The lemon law exists because you can't change the odometer to say how many miles are on there on your own. It's got to be correct. The concept of market manipulation happens from the small all the way to the big. And if you think of it as a you go to your friend and you're trading sports cards, you know, baseball cards, and he tells you there's only 40 of these around. And he sells it to you at a higher price because there's only 40 of them in existence. And then you go out and find out that there's a lot more. He's technically violated the law. That's fraud. To give you information that isn't correct. Now, he's allowed to tell you it's in condition if he believes it. And that's not manipulation. That's buyer beware. When you get to the stock market or to Vegas for that matter, you're allowed to bluff. You're allowed to buy to try to move the market or sell to try to move the market and then capitalize on that. That's what the market is about. You're not allowed to lie to people to tell them something that they believe to be true. That's fraud or market manipulation. It's kind of the same category. So that's something to be aware of. Fake news has been around forever. Forever. If you've got an opinion about somebody, I mean, just going back to the Roman Empire, where there's graffiti and people would hire the official Senate announcer, who is this kind of a religious position, who would go out in the squares and announce to everyone what the Senate had said. And you could hire that person. Of course, people got in trouble for doing this, but you could hire that person to go out and announce something that totally wasn't true. Or you could hire somebody to dress up like that person and go out and announce something that totally wasn't true. And that's fake news. It's been around forever. You have to vet your sources. It's up to you.
Speaking of graffiti and fake news, it's that time.
It's time for
some graffiti and fake news.
Yeah, we're going to spread commercial mayhem across the country. We've got some commercials to play. We'll be back on the other side of the Personal Wealth Coach. If you'd like to join us, the phone number to call in here is 773-1400. That's 254-773-1400. And we'll be back on the other side with more of the Personal Wealth Coach.
And we're back with more of the Personal Wealth Coach, starring Jeff and
Jake
McClure. And the telephone number in here hasn't changed, so, but I will tell you anyway. It's 254-773-1400, presuming that today is February 18th, and we have our heads, I don't know.
Our heads screwed on upside down, appropriately. All right. Well, we got some other news out there, too.
Yeah, we haven't even mentioned the fact that the Standard & Poor's 500 stock index this week was up 1.5%, which is pretty amazing, actually. If you multiply that times 52, you get some pretty astonishing numbers, to say the least. The fact is that the market is up for two very good reasons right now. One is that we have a lot of analysts. The consensus in analysts is that earnings in the S&P 500 stocks will rise, depending on which analyst, somewhere around 10.5% this year. Now, when you consider that the market is already up since the election about that much, most of that is already baked in. We've still got some room to run, because the market was up about 5% so far year to date, and it's for this year that the forecast is for about a 10% rise in earnings. So we still could see, with just the news is out there, with no change in anything, based on the real facts that are available to us right now, and analyst estimates generally tend to come in below what the real earnings are. The fact that the market is up 5% so far, the stock market's up 5% so far this year, is pretty reasonable. It's pretty normal. But some of that rise, and certainly some of the optimism that's in the market right now, is being driven by promises. And there's two promises that are driving it, at least according to the people who have been interviewed and the traders, as they're interviewed by people like the Wall Street Journal.
Right.
One.
Regulatory reform.
Regulatory relief.
And tax cuts.
Those are the two things. And corporate tax cuts. The problem with that, and this is something that could come back to bite us, is that it takes about as long to deregulate as it does to regulate, and to make a new regulation takes several years. We could easily not see any significant regulatory relief until next year at the earliest. If everybody got started on it right now and they got to working on it really, really hard, there might be some odds and ends that get relieved, but nothing of any great significance is likely to happen that has a big economic impact. It's just an attitude change at this point.
This is, and I mentioned this back in January. It seems like months and months ago, but it was not that long ago. I mentioned this back in January.
It was month and month ago.
1 month ago. The administration started off with a flurry of executive orders, just started shooting them out at high speed. And I said it at the time, this is not how you play chess. This is not how you negotiate with people that you need to, with your allies in Congress or elsewhere. This is how you, if you're in a business takeover, do a business takeover. But that assumes that you have ultimate power, and the president doesn't have ultimate power. So I think anybody that listens to us for any long period of time at all recognizes that we look at any administration, whether that's Obama, whether that's Trump or Bush or Clinton or anybody else, we want to look at the policies and define what potential policies would be good for the economy, what potential policies would be bad for the economy, and say whether or not we have any of those policies have kind of a hope of being passed. One of the problems that's going on right now is that there's no focus from the Trump administration. They're not focused on one issue. They're focused on dozens of issues. You got immigration, you got taxes, you've got regulation. There's no one common theme. And that works in business if you have a good team together that's surrounding you and supporting you. It doesn't work well in politics. Politics is that about sums it up.
Well,
that lack of word, that it means that you've got to have a consensus of people. You've got to convince them, and that takes a long time because there's a lot of people that all have their own things that they want done, and rarely do they overlap. So even the concept of repealing Obamacare, this has been a Republican mantra for a long time. They want to repeal it. Well, now they have the opportunity to repeal it, and they have to agree on how to do it. The president's role here would be to choose one of the options that he likes and put his capital support behind it, his head support, his political capital to say, this is what we're doing. But instead, he's impatient and he wants to go on and talk about the next subject before he's convinced Congress on the first subject, which means they never get convinced across the board. And there's a lot of talk and a lot of chaos, but not focused. It doesn't go through. Even Paul Ryan's tax plan has some big, big hurdles to get over.
Yeah, and in this, there's a lot of complexity to changing something in Washington or anywhere else for that matter. The for instance, a lot of the regulations – We've just got a new director of the EPA, and a lot of people think immediately the left is thinking the world's going to come to an end, and
right.
The right is thinking they're going to get instant relief.
Neither of those is going to be the case.
The reality is that Congress passed some laws, and the laws directed the EPA to do some things, and they put some regulations in place. And yeah, the new director of the EPA may choose not to enforce some of those laws, some of those regulations that are in place. The problem with that is an individual or a group can sue a company for violating EPA regulations. That's pretty clear.
Right. If you live in a community and the EPA is no longer regulating a rule that exists, they're no longer enforcing it. And if you live in that community, there's a law written, a regulation written, and you can sue the company anyway. And that is not the kind of relief that's wanted. When the EPA comes in, as much as the EPA is heavy-handed and not cool, the kind of relief given to in lawsuits, generally the fines are exorbitantly higher when it's a lawsuit award against a large company rather than an EPA fine on that company. So, you know, when people talk about, I don't want to be jumping in and taking over the subject here because this is one we both share, but the United States has some of the safest cars in the world. And that's something that is well known in the car industry. They're safer than Japanese cars in Japan. They're safer than German cars in Germany. They're safer than British cars in Britain. Each of those things is absolutely true. And the reason isn't because the United States has much stricter regulation on the manufacturers. It's because of lawsuits. If we have a law on the books and it's not being enforced, the lawsuits can come in and do it. So if the EPA comes in and says, we're not going to enforce this, that doesn't mean it stops. It just means that the lawyers have a lot more leeway. The EPA is supposed to get in there first. It's almost a protection for the industries against these lawsuits. If the law's on the books, and this is the same with the Labor Department, by the way, if the fiduciary rule doesn't go through, if it gets stopped, the law still says that you've got to act as a fiduciary when you're dealing with ERISA products, ERISAs being retirement products. And that's been defined now. So just because the Labor Department isn't enforcing the fiduciary rule doesn't mean it won't exist and that people won't be sued for not following it. So this is the different areas. The court system is the fallback. If the prosecutors aren't prosecuting, you can take it to civil court.
The thing I wanted to talk about, I guess, is not whether or not the regulatory relief will go through, although that is going to take some better coordination, I think, than we're seeing right now. It isn't whether taxes on corporations are going to get cut. I really can't tell you whether they'll get cut or not at this point. And therein is the rub. I sit down and did some back of the napkin calculations on how much it would cost.
Wait, why didn't you use the front of the napkin?
Because it had food stuff on it.
Okay, all right. So back of the napkin. Okay.
On the costs involved in over the next 10 years, which is the way the Balanced Budget Act says that costs have to be calculated. And it looks like it's about a $2 trillion cost to cut corporate taxes to 20%. Now, theoretically, the House version, the Better Way version, says that will be offset by putting a 20% border adjustment tax on anything that's imported. Well, the problem with that 20% border adjustment tax is, despite all the rosy promises that the dollar will go up and offset it, and so there won't really be any additional cost to us, it's not probably true.
The consumers are going to be the ones that wind up paying it.
Yeah, so basically, if you look at everything that it says made in China on it, and all the fruits and vegetables you see in the grocery store, and you think about all that and then the parts that are in your car that were made in Mexico or China or wherever, and your iPhone or your telephones that were made someplace
else.
Or
Android or whatever it is.
All the stuff that you buy.
20% more.
Has a 20% extra tax put on it to pay for corporate income tax cut. Now, the corporate income tax cut means that the corporations maybe can lower their prices a little bit. But that isn't going to be as big a factor as the biggest factor. And the biggest factor is that stuff's going to cost probably 15 to 20% more. So
right. So here's why that is. Let me just run that by really fast. You'll recognize this, listener. You do your taxes. You're going about your day-to-day life. You pay your taxes as you make your money. If you're self-employed, you send it in every quarter. If you're giving money to the IRS, you're hoping that you're doing it right. You think, I'm going to be paying about this much. But it's all in over the year, and you don't know whether or not you need to change that till you file your taxes, which may be much later. And corporations file their taxes much later than the individual. In most cases, they extend it. So they don't know what their savings will be from the corporate tax cuts, and they don't know whether they should lower their prices or anything else. However, if they get a tax at the border for 20%, they know immediately that product that's coming across the border needs to charge the person that buys it 20% more to have the same profit margin. So that's an immediate tax increase for us. Versus a delayed tax cut for corporations.
And I did a quick calculation, and depending on who you are and how much money you make and how much stuff you buy and all, somewhere between $250 and $500 a month extra income would be needed to your paycheck if you're in a family of four to maintain the same standard of living after a 20% border adjustment tax was imposed. Ouch.
Yeah, that's a physical pain.
And
it's really hard when you're talking about tax cuts. The immediate implication of a tax cut is all your prices go up.
And that's just, unfortunately, the United States government needs that money to keep doing what it does, particularly if we're going to increase defense and we're going to increase spending on highways.
Yeah. So we're about out of time for this hour, and we want to begin the conversation next hour where we left off here. talking about the budget a little bit more. And then we're going to move on to general economics rather than governmental side. The monetary and fiscal policy shouldn't be the whole thing we talk about all day long. So we'll be talking about other stuff, some really good stuff on the leading indicators. But if you would like to contact us off the air, the phone numbers to call locally are
254-947-1111.
You can reach that same number toll-free at 1-800-914-7526. You can go to our webpage, tpwc.com or thepersonalwealthcoach.com. You can email us directly, Jeff at tpwc or Jake at tpwc.com. Until next hour, this is the Personal
Truth.
Wealth Coach.
It's not just a word on your Fox News station. News Radio 1400 KTEM AM, Temple, Belton, Killeen, Fort Hood.